Welcome to my first in-person episode, where I sit down with Morten Therkelsen, Director of Safety at Roskilde Festival in Denmark. We caught up at the EBIT 2023 conference in Cologne, where we both presented. I was there on behalf of the Global Crowd Management Alliance, speaking about Zone X, and Morten spoke about the meaning of and how we use the words safety and security, especially as in some languages they are the same word. We sat down for a quick chat to capture the essence of what we learned over the 2 days. As this is recorded live in the Rhein Energy Stadium, there are background noises of talking, bottle crates, and the football club's mascot reminding us of session start times. This is a casual conversation between two members of the Global Crowd Management Alliance, hopefully demonstrating the importance of international exchange, something which the EBIT and the GCMA champion and facilitate. I hope you enjoy. We are at IBIT 2023. I'm with Morten Therkelsen. Kind of got that right?
Yeah.
I think I did okay.
Perfect.
We're going to go with that. And we're doing, what are we doing? We're just having a quick bit chat, a little bit of a chat to capture our discussions from the last 2 days, I think, because it's really great to talk about it now while it's still fresh in our heads.
Yeah.
And I, from my perspective, there's been so much that I've learned.
It's been amazing.
Yeah.
Really, really good, yes.
Yeah. What for you are you coming away from this with?
I think the first thing is to keep on being humble, understanding that there is a lot we do not know. Mm. And for every presentation you go into, you learn new things. I really, really like the go through of Love Parade, the understanding of the challenges, the idea of proximal risk and distal risk, because we have been looking at, oh, it's the police cordons, it's stuff like that, but actually it's something completely else that led to it. And it's not necessarily what they did on the day, but it's more maybe organizational-wise. And then also some clear tools, and like 1.3 person per square meter if they're moving around. I think that was quite nice, actually.
Yeah.
I like your presentation with the whole idea of Zone X. I think we can spend more time on that in general, which also the Love Parade then shows, because that's a Zone X problem, basically. I think it's been very good, and we are not done yet.
There's still so much more, and your talk as well. I mean, as we heard yesterday, you are the head of everything at Roskilde.
Apparently that's my new title. But
one of the things I think with the Love Parade, the way Professor Jürgen went through, he went through the presentation in a way that it allowed us to have that back and forth conversation. So it was like this, like, okay, this happened, now what? And he's asking us, you know, in the audience, like, what would you have done? What would you do? What decisions would you do? Mm-hmm. And for me, that was really important, because I want to know, am I making a decision that I think is right and actually it's causing something bad to happen? But then when we go through the whole thing, realizing that actually from our perspective, when we plan the event, our first pass analysis of, is the site fit for purpose? Do we have, you know, ingress and egress in different locations? So would we have even had that event knowing what we know now with all the skills and training experience we have? Would we have even had it there? You know, that's the kind of question. So that was, but back in 2010, would we have had the skills, training, experience and qualifications back then to have made those decisions?
Back in 2010, I just finished my bachelor degree from Box and crowd safety management, and I think that was the highest degree at that point you could have. I just this summer finished my master's in crowded places public safety management at Coventry University, and that was quite interesting, because that was more organizational, the idea of how you set up your organization. And I think that was very interesting about the Love Parade, because it's very organizational. And it also comes down to, do the promoters want to actually know what's going wrong or what challenges? Or is it really driven by, we want this event to go on?
Yeah.
Do the people who plan it understand what they plan?
Yeah.
Is there a proper line of discussion about the challenges, or is it more I present how I do it?
Yeah.
And if the authorities, as an example, who's checking you, doesn't have the competence to check you, then as long as it looks good, then it must be good.
Exactly.
All of this, I think, and that's what my master's was a lot about, which I found amazing. So yeah, in 2010, we didn't have the knowledge. We had some knowledge at that
yes.
point.
Yeah.
Because the first bachelor cohort actually just came out, and so there were some knowledge, but then again, it's different knowledge, right?
Yeah. And you know, back in 2007.
Brilliant. This is the goat telling us we have to go back into a session, right?
We are being herded by goats.
Yeah.
In 2007, I was leaving school and I was doing my bachelor's degree in event management, and that was one of the first event management courses that existed in the UK. And even though there was a health and safety aspect of it, there wasn't a crowd management module. So we're kind of seeing that the evolution of us as crowd safety practitioners is really kind of starting to grow from that point onwards.
Yeah, but I also think the pessimistic side of me, right? I fully agree, yes, it's growing. But then the first presentation with Fegan Mori about Martin's Law is one of the challenges we then see as crowd managers, because it's a lot easier focusing on the challenges of terrorism, because
yes.
there's a pure enemy. This
yes.
is what went wrong, therefore you should have protected it. It's very simple.
Yeah.
Where looking at the Love Parade is so complex, right? It's so many things. If that happened, maybe that would have influenced it. And I think my master's was about safety and security, where security is like protecting people against the intention of harm. And that's what the police are actually there for, which means that it's a lot easier to have legislation about security things
yeah.
than crowd management.
Yeah.
So I think that's one of the challenges.
And you're touching on something really important here, because yes, when it comes to counterterrorism, it's very easy to find that the cause of the problem, you know, because it was one person, or you know, one person detonated a bomb, for example. Whereas in these kind of complex disasters, it's a myriad of causes and conditions that have come together. And if you remove one of those conditions, would that disaster have happened? And so that, from the perspective of legal cases and prosecution ensuing, it makes it very hard to find out who the cause is.
Who's
but
to
then,
blame?
Who's to blame? And then, but then if you look back, because events are also deeply political,
mm-hmm.
and there's and there's many reasons why.
The goat is back.
Yeah. So the politics that push us to put on an event, and politics get involved in events far more than people realize, and force events to happen when they're probably not safe to do so.
Well, you are not having a world championship or Olympics or a Tour de France without the Prime Minister signing for it.
Yeah.
So yeah, they really get involved. The
yeah.
Tour de France Grand Départ in Denmark last year was organized by the government and organized by cities. And the city where I come from, the city wanted to arrange everything themselves, which actually meant that they were licensing themselves.
Yes.
So that's a little weird, I think.
Yes.
And the people who are licensing us were actually the people who were on the planning side, where sometimes you would feel like, okay, hang on, if I give you my safety concept, can you then just copy whatever you want into that event? Because now you're my competitor. Now you're not an individual person from the licensing authorities. So yeah, it's massively political
yeah.
with a lot of things, which we also, to be fair, plays the other way around sometimes, because it also gives us, we are a very large festival, it also gives us a little bit of power. When we see some challenges, we can also go in and push on the political side. So that's also a part of it. But yeah, it is very political, and Love Parade was very political, and anti-terrorism is very political, and it's really, really challenging,
yeah.
all of it, right?
And it just, I think for me, it's it's realizing, like you said at the very start of our chat, that there's so much we do not know, mm-hmm. and it just makes me more aware of how much I do not know, and actually more aware that it's, you know, when I first started in the industry, I just wanted to plan events and make people happy. And I still do want to make people happy, and that's the purpose of why I do events. But kind of this understanding that this the industry is this like evolving beast that is becoming more and more and more complex. Mm-hmm. And I know that Emma Parkinson is her PhD, she's studying that concept, because we know the nuclear and the aviation industry are complex industries.
Yes.
Yet we as the events industry don't have that structure or support. We're kind of still left out on our own, you know, it growing. So I feel like we're really in the middle of something that's kind of exponentially changing very fast.
Yeah, there's the expression of high reliant organization, which is the airline industry and oil and whatever you mentioned there. And the idea of a high-reliant organization is that you have to know what you're doing. You have to be able, every single person must be able to act immediately, because otherwise it can evolve. And hey, look at an event, look at Love Parade, look at whatever. We are supposed to be high-reliant organizations, but we aren't. Mm. I mean, we work with, well, bare minimum trained staff, or some of it might be highly trained. We develop all the time. It's a massive amount of information we need to get, and we jump from event to event.
Yeah.
So it's not like we plan one event that runs all the time. Morten Tanning Venlo wrote a working paper, academic paper about creating that resilience in a regenerating organization. Mm-hmm. So it's about how Roskilde Festival actually managed to create a high reliant organization, or at least try to, when they regenerate every year. Mm. And that's actually quite interesting, because that's one of our massive challenges.
Yeah.
And if you're a company that jumps from one event to the other, well, quite often you're too busy to actually go into the details, where if you are one-off festival, you might not be able to develop yourself in the way that you have a training platform to do other things, and then you just focus on that festival, and then you end with that very narrow-minded, oh, this worked for me. Yeah, but did it work, or were you just lucky?
Mm.
My combination in my position is that we both have the festival, but we also run a company where we provide services for other clients.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a very good combination, because that also means that a lot of my staff can actually do a lot of work during the year, and then they come in. So we run the festival with our own staff, and they're all volunteers.
Yeah.
That's how we run
amazing.
It. Yeah. Because we're a charity organization, so. But I need them to not just be somebody who shows up and do 4 or 5 or 6 days, but I need to trust them. I need to know that they are trained. I need to know what they're able to do. That works by doing it the other way.
Yeah, and you've got that, because they're also continuing to do other events, it means that when it comes to the festival the next year, you know, they're not dusting off the cobwebs. They're ready. They're resilient. They're trained. They've got the recent, you know, so they're kind of, they're ready for the you know, just like an athlete. An athlete doesn't just sit around all year. They're training, they're practicing, and making sure they're ready for the main event.
Yeah, and then you can say, in UK, you will just buy a company to come in and do it. Yeah, but they also jump really high. And then often you have the other challenge of different cultures, because you might need different companies to come together, and they are differently trained, they have different cultures. And that's what you see under the tip of the iceberg, right?
Mm.
So it looks like everything is perfect, but is it really? Because you made it a little more complicated for you.
Yeah.
Because now you think that you know what you're doing, but actually the other guy might know something else. And oh yeah, it's a lovely thing we're working with, huh?
It is. I know. Sometimes I do sit there going, should I have been a gardener instead?
Well, I started out as an air traffic controller, so I think it's actually close to the same. And I work from...
That must have been very stressful, although you do work in events.
Yeah.
That must have been really...
Yeah, it's a different job.
Was it fun?
So, well, sometimes.
Okay.
I think it's like ours. It's a very high, high position where there's a lot of pressure put on you, and yeah, it's a good position, but also sometimes it's not. And from there on, I moved more into the airline industry, and then into shipping and all of these things. So I've done a lot of weird things, and all of it has been about management and compliance.
Mm.
And this is actually what we're doing. It's about compliance. If you write that you're doing something, you have to do it. How do you make that happen?
Yeah.
And I think that's what Love Parade actually shows. You say you do something, but do you really do it? Do you really know how you do it? If you look at the Fegan Murray's presentation, where she was also saying, you might say that your company, your staff are trained, but are they really trained in a way where they know how to implement it?
Yeah.
Are your supervisors creating that atmosphere of, hey, come to me, I'm here to help you? Some supervisors and managers are task-oriented, where actually you need to be individual or team-oriented. Say, hey, I'm here to lead my team.
Yeah.
I'm here to help you out. But if they're more task-oriented, they might give out orders. And that makes a young 18, 19, 20-year-old person maybe a little more not willing to say, I didn't understand what you were saying.
Yeah. And that's a huge... your plan that's on paper isn't worth anything if you don't deliver what it said. But also, if you're not, you know, there's so much that isn't on paper that we do or do not do based on our skills, experience, training, qualifications, and also the inability of something to happen. You know, you can say, oh, well, our site was completely fenced, but the next thing, the fencing gets delivered and you're a couple of panels short. You've got A, a gap, or B, a smaller site.
Yeah.
You know, so these things that happen in practice are going to have, it's a huge shift from a plan to, you know, to the event. So,
yeah. Yeah, and if you run a massive festival like we do, you can't see everything. But actually this summer, by coincidence, I saw a sign that was completely wrong.
Mm.
And it actually led people through a bottleneck. So from our main state to our second state, it grabbed a lot of the people and directed them into a bottleneck area where they weren't supposed to go through.
Wow.
Basically because the sign was designed wrong. So when you saw it from that angle, you would see as that, oh, I have to go through these buildings. But actually the sign was meant to say you have to go around these buildings, but the arrows were wrongly angled. And fortunately, by coincidence, I passed by it early and said, hang on, this doesn't look right. And oh, there's a lot of people in here. And I immediately got it stopped with staff. If I hadn't been there, the speed we're talking about, the people move and it expands, is massively.
Yeah.
So you might do a lot of planning and you might do a lot of things, but then you can't find every little detail when you're walking in a massive site.
No.
So you have to have that idea of trusting people, the idea of having a very fast organization that can really, if you say I need staff, boom, then they're there to solve it. Because we're talking minutes, basically.
Yeah.
Really, really, that's the scary part, right?
Yeah, and it goes back to what I said yesterday in the talk about the JESSEP protocol in the UK, the Joint Emergency Services Interoperability Protocol, because of the importance of knowing speed and accuracy are the two most important things when it comes to dealing with an incident or emergency plan. And even though we always think about responding to incidents as it's always thrown in the bucket of emergency plans, but actually we're dealing with crowds. Anything is an incident.
Yeah.
You know, whereas where people are just kind of stuck queuing for the toilets and it rains. Like, that is an incident that we need to already have a plan in place for how we respond to the type of incident is and being able to respond fast and accurately.
Yeah.
After
our accident at Roskilde Festival, coroners wrote in the district attorney's report. It was written that under those circumstances where you have a crowd collapse, you have 3 to 5 minutes, then you will die. That's what they wrote. And for me, that mindset is that, you have to be fast to make decisions.
Yeah.
And we've worked massively with that after Roskilde Festival, with the YES Group, Europe Event Safety Group, sharing knowledge. You're also GCMA. This is quite important. But I'm realizing now, looking at the South Korea thing and looking at Love Parade, that crowd collapse. I mean, we're not talking about being pushed up against a wall, but just basically crowd collapses happens also in movement area and not just in front of stages. So in front of a stage, you put in the showstopper procedures and all of these things, and that's why you can manage interfering in maybe 90 seconds or whatever you are aiming for. But in a zone X arrival area where you didn't see the problem coming, we are not talking 90 minutes, 90 seconds. We are talking, let's be fast and say 10 to 15 minutes. Well, there on it's really, really maybe too late.
Yeah.
So it's scary to think of, right?
And even, you know, thinking about with the Love Parade and how where the incident happened, and he said that, you know, the density increased and we had the crowd turbulence, you know, when you've got that shift from people being able to control their body individually to moving as a whole. And he said there were the three sort of goals that people had. One was to climb the container, one was to climb the lamppost, and one was to get to the stairs.
Yeah.
And so the people who weren't able to climb were, you know, the majority of the kind of wave of people were reaching towards the stairs, and that's where the people died. And so you put that into kind of a ingress and egress and zone X kind of perspective of, like, can you pre-mortem, not post-mortem, but pre-mortem that, you know, you see your arrival, they arrive at the train station, they come to the venue. Is there an area in that can happen? And, you know, and it goes back to that whole first pass analysis of, well, do we have cross flow? You know, do you have that counter flow, or do you have, is there something that the speed, density, or flow changes that could allow that to happen? So with the parade route, if people are following a parade in the trucks and the trucks are going at a certain speed, okay, well, now your flow rate, the speed is restricted to this pace or this many people per minute. And if those trucks stop and then the density increases, then does that create this crowd congestion, because now you've got maybe people between a building and a truck, so now so it's trying to preempt that happening in something that is so changeable as zone X, as ingress, as egress, the last mile, you know.
Yeah, and I think that's where you are in your presentation was quite interesting, just the fact that you start with, hey, we used to do this, but now it has a new name, it's called zone X, and therefore we know what we're doing. That's those smaller things. But Zone X isn't posh. It's not something we really want to spend money on. It's not something we really want to staff or anything like that, or even spend our energy on, because it's not the real show.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at the licensing terms in Denmark, it says within the fence is my responsibility, outside the fence is the authorities. But it isn't, because it's my audience, and I like the presentation you had where we could see the flow of people coming in and literally just guiding them, even though they were just on a regular street getting to the place. And that's what I think we need to do more. But that said, we're not even good enough to do what we're supposed to do inside. So we're coming back to, where is the limit? Where is the amount of knowledge we must have? And one thing is, do the promoters want to pay for it? That's one thing.
Yeah.
But the other thing is, do we have the qualified people? You said at 2010, there weren't. Okay, we are way further ahead now, like you, other people having the masters in crowd science or all of these things. So yeah, we're in a different position now.
Mm.
Yeah, but it's also been more complicated to do it, I think we are challenged in finding the skilled people, even though we want to pay for them.
Yes.
That's my problem in Denmark. If I want to hire somebody, good luck.
Yeah.
They do not exist.
Yeah.
And the few that we are already working for one of the big promoters, like me for Roskilde or whatever. And so I basically have to go out and find a guy, and then I need to train him myself, because it's not a it's not an industry career. Crowd management isn't an industry career yet. Where security is, that's an industry career. Yeah, but that's something else because it's against the intention of harm.
Yes.
And therefore, you will get a lot of anti-terrorism professionals. That's the easy part, to be honest. You just go out, buy somebody. There are a lot of people who are extremely skilled within it. But crowd management, not really.
Yeah.
So even if we want to do better, maybe we can't.
Yeah, we're restricted in the limitations of where we are today.
Yeah, and then we come back to the only thing we learn from history is that we learn nothing from history.
And it's thinking of, you know, like we're looking back to 2010, okay, look ahead to, you know, like 2030. Is something going to happen between now and 2030 that today we didn't know was a problem or a risk?
Yeah, let's just look at Corona, right?
Yeah.
The everlasting story. If you look at the last years of development, 2017, 18, 19, those years, our industry, the live entertainment industry, massively rose. It was really growing so many percent. Then it completely died. If it completely dies, people will leave the industry.
Yeah.
We didn't start off as saying, okay, hang on, let's go back to 2010 or 2015 and restart slowly again. No, we jumped right back to in, taking the 2019 and then adding additional percentage. I just saw Live Nations, oh, we made so much money last year. Well, hang on, was that a good idea? Mm. Were you really supposed to, or did you just put pressure on the whole industry instead of restarting? Yeah, because they are lacking money and they are saying, next year, we are to 2024, we are gonna grow again with a two-figure percentage amount. Well, where are they gonna get the staff from? And let's say we could get the staff, but do we have the qualifications, the competence for the people who are supposed to plan it?
Yeah.
Or are we planning shows that we actually shouldn't run?
Oh yeah.
So it's a lot more than just nice presentation, understanding the flow rates, and there's new law coming in. It is really, really a whole industry and a whole organizational challenge.
Yeah. Do we have the basics right? I mean, if we were to look at a calendar of events in a country in a given year and go, right, take out all of the people who, you know, in the UK, we just had the BBC report into the sham training. So people having security licenses when they don't have the competency or haven't actually been trained or have passed the test to get that license. So if we take everyone who doesn't have the say competency to deliver the role of a steward or security at an event, remove all of them from the picture and then still look at that calendar events, how many of those events will have to be removed from the calendar because actually we cannot deliver that event safely with the competency of the people that we actually have in the country.
And how many countries can actually create safe events? I mean, it's called Global Crowd Management Association, but what is a crowd manager? Does it just mean I work with crowds, then I'm a crowd manager? That's not defined anywhere.
Yes. And the definition of crowd safety, crowd management, crowd science, crowd control. I mean, I'm writing these definitions in some of the articles that I write, but I'm taking them from Fruin or taking them from Professor Heath Still in the kind of research. But you know, are there agreed definitions? Do we all need to call ourselves crowd managers?
If we have an agreed definition, because I think we can fairly, you and I and a lot of other people can fairly agree what it's about, we might divert a little bit. I'm starting to say it's not really crowd safety manager.
Yep.
I'm starting crossing out safety and saying it's crowd density manager. That's a wording I'm using. I'm a crowd density manager because that's what people say. That's what Keith Still says, Fruin, all of these guys says. It's the density that kills people. That's what Love Parade shows. So you're a crowd density manager. But that's not only it, because it's organizational and a lot of other things. But even if we agree on the definition of it, that doesn't mean that we have agreed on what it takes to be a crowd manager. And that's going to take years and years and years before we agree on it. And who's supposed to decide it? the police? Well, they are not crowd managers. No. So who's supposed to decide it?
Yeah. Yeah, there's no competency within any kind of authority to, yeah. Because we're still learning. And how do I know, you know, me 10 years from now will look back on me 2023 and go, oh God, she didn't know what she was doing. You know, so there's so much that I don't know. I'm doing the best that I can. I think we're all doing the best that we can. But there's so much that we don't know. So how can you then determine what classes someone as, you know, let's say if we look at the medical, like as a surgeon or a doctor or, you know, because you have those sort of remits of what you need to be able to demonstrate your competency in. And we don't have those agreed, even that agreed. And if we look at the formal training, which, you know, with the masters and the Bachelor of Science and bachelor degrees, which are coming and going, you know, they are changing. But how important they are, because you need that formal thread of education as well as apprenticeship training experience as well. But even that's just based on what we know now.
Yes.
What are we going to know in the future that we go, God, we should have added that?
Yeah, because it's such a new industry.
Yeah.
And yet, if we go back, one of the first time that we were talking about crowd safety management was 1980 with The WHO. Paul Wertheimer wrote in his report that it should be equal terms as everything else, putting in something about managing the crowd. Mm. So it's not that new. It's basically 40-something years old, but it's not. Nothing really happened. Then came the accident at Roskilde. That really started a lot of things with knowledge sharing and education and all of these things. And now we are here and we see Love Parade and we see Astroworld and we see South Korea and we see all of these things. And we are not there yet.
Yeah.
The first security company that were formed was formed back in 1852.
1852
is where you saw the first one.
Yeah.
And that was the Pinkerton's Detective Bureau in America. So the security industry, and we are not talking about armies, which is a security industry,
talking
about private security as we know it today, is from 1852.
I love that.
And we are crowd management, and we walk around, we know everything. Hang on. We are less than 100 years younger, or more than 100 years younger than the security industry.
Wow.
No wonder we have a few challenges in understanding when we're talking together.
Yeah.
Right? So I think it has been some fantastic years. We are developing, we are moving in the right direction. We'll keep on getting two steps ahead and then one step back and sometimes three steps back, but then we move forward again.
Yeah.
And I think we will see a change in the years to come. I also think we will see a massive amount of people who need to train and need to take the education. It's so needed because the live industry is a big industry.
Yes.
And it is our role to protect it, basically. And it's our role to make sure that the promoters understand that it's our role to protect it. And it's not just about protecting the crowd. It's basically about protecting the whole industry and the client and their brands and the artist and everything, because that's their industry. And look at, again, Live Nation, and not making them bad guys or anything like that. They are just so big, so they keep on coming up.
Yeah.
The amount of legal cases they have against them is massive.
Mm.
Yeah, of course, because they did the Manchester Arena thing, Ariana Grande. They did the Astroworld because they do a lot of shows. They are so massively big, so they're putting themselves at risk all the time. And this is not about only the proximal risk on site. It's also about the distal. Is their organization able to do it? Are the worlds that they are coming into when they do touring, are they able to do it? Are we actually really able to understand the different cultures when you move around? So years ahead, it's going to be very interesting, I think. And then at some point, I'm going to retire. In 20-something years.
But not before you do everything that you are doing to make this industry safer. And it's really great to listen to you, Morten, and learn from you and watch
likewise.
What you're doing. thank
same.
You in Roskilde. So thank you so much for taking the time
thank
to
you.
Chat
Thanks.
With me.
Now we're going to go listen to something about crowd communication.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm ready for
listen
it.
Listen to Sam. All right.
Cool. Thank you so
thank
much.
You.
Thank you.
You. Easy.
Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a review and follow the show for more episodes to come. If you would like to learn more about crowd safety and improving the events industry, you can visit my website and blog at esaymurphy.com.